This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. In 2009, Joe Lowry landed a big gig as a backup singer for one live performance with the award-winning rock musician Sting. Well, she had to do something right because Sting asked her to continue singing with him at private events and fundraisers. What she didn't know is that those performances were another audition of sorts. Sting was so pleased that he asked Joe to join him on tour. It was a dream come true for an artist who had made her living as a backup singer. 6 years later, she's still singing with Sting. She was featured in the 2014 Oscar-winning film 20 Feet from Stardom, and today the tables have turned. Joe Lowry has a new solo album out. Sting is singing backup. Joe Lowry performs tomorrow night at Rose Fest in Bahama, Sunday afternoon at the Jazz Brunch at the BU Cafe in Durham, and then Sunday night at Sharp 9 Gallery in Durham. But first, with me on the State of Things, Joe Lowry, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks. Nice to be here, Frank.
How did you get started in music?
Well, it's not the most original story, but I come from a musical family. I'm the youngest of five kids, and we all learnt instruments. Most of us learnt two, and it was a very important value in my family to play music. It was not the plan, I think. My parents didn't really plan for any of us to do it as a career, but I took it a little further.
They were classical musicians?
No, they're all in science in my family. My dad was an organic chemist, and my mum a pharmacist, and brother's a physicist, and my sister's a doctor, but everyone played music. Everyone still loves music in my family.
You got a Fulbright scholarship and came to the U.S. in 2003. How did your musical career then get started in this country?
Well, the Fulbright scholarship was to study jazz in New York, and I went to Purchase College, and as in so many of the jazz schools in the U.S., there are some fantastic musicians that are on faculty, and in Purchase College in particular, I found that the faculty was always up for giving the students an opportunity. So my first performances in the US and in New York were with faculty from Purchase College, John Faddis and Todd Kuhlman and Pete Malinverney, and all these fabulous jazz musicians would invite the students to join them for some of their performances. So through that, I got to play with Frank Foster and Clark Terry and, you know, half of my CD collection.
Well, this is great. So you're going there to study. I mean, how proficient were you as a musician? Obviously, this is, you know, you're on a Fulbright, you're going to study jazz. Were you at that point, do you think?
Well, I'd already done my undergrad and honors degree in jazz in Australia, and I was teaching at a university over there. So I was pretty well set up to do the master's over there. But of course, the thing that really stretched me was the music that I made outside of school. You know, there's so much that it's pretty impossible to learn anywhere but on the bandstand. So that was a really an education, to say the least.
And was it your goal to strike out on your own, to be a solo performer or an ensemble performer in jazz?
Well, you know, yes, I did. I fully intended to go back to Australia and do it there, but I had these amazing opportunities to play with other jazz musicians such as Fred Hirsch and Donnie McCaslin. And when Fred Hirsch asked me to join his band, the Fred Hirsch Pocket Orchestra, that's when I really started to think, I might like to stick around here for a while because I love being part of an ensemble. And at that time, my focus was really, I wanted to be the first call vocalist that people would call when they had something that they thought was going to be unsingable. You know, to sing as to be an instrument rather than a voice. So
that was to talk more about that, the idea that you could fill in for instruments that are in that sort of vocal range.
Yeah, well, I love to sing wordless music, and I love to improvise, and you know, that's something that obviously is a high value in jazz, and it's something that I spent a lot of time studying and working on right through. I continued studying after I got to the States. I went to New England Conservatory in Boston to do my doctorate, which is as yet not 100% complete because I got a little bit waylaid by the gig with Sting. But I love to be part of an ensemble where everybody is improvising, and you know, that's something that's tremendously exciting, very, very scary. Yeah. But also the challenge. I love it when somebody presents me with some music that hasn't been performed before by a vocalist, and you know, the challenge to try to make it work is very exciting.
How did you tell us about that audition with Sting, the first audition?
The first audition, well, it was almost like Sting was the Great Oz because he wasn't actually in the room at the time. He was in Italy, I think, and they were talking back and forth via the internet, and he was listening to samples that they were sending. I was in a studio with several other singers, including Lisa Fisher, who I believe you've had on the show. And we were singing together in various permutations, different vocal parts, switching parts, and sending versions back and forth to him. And he kind of chose the combination he was most interested in. And then the first time I met him was actually when I turned up at his house in Italy for the first rehearsal.
What do you think, what's Sting, for instance, looking for in backup vocalists? What combination of technical, you know, ability, and then you sort of have to match what he's trying to do. You're going to be on stage, you got to look. I mean, all those things have to matter, right? And you have to blend with other voices that he hasn't chosen yet. I mean, just trying to imagine how you even make that choice or what you're listening for.
Well, you know, I think what he's looking for in a backing vocalist has changed from project to project. Yeah. And the first project that I did, they were looking for a very specific skill set, not what you would think. I think the brief was somebody with choral experience, knowledge of English, Irish, and Scottish folk music, being able to read, and being able to improvise. And so that was actually, it was like it was tailor-made for me, even though, you know, I wouldn't have thought, I wasn't really in the pop world before that. And I think the other thing that he's looking for is a team player. You know, I mean, I think even he puts the music before himself. Mm. And I think that's a really important value for him, for his other members of his band. So when you are more focused on blending with the artist and making the song and the story come out rather than self-aggrandizing, that's a pretty good start, I think.
Well, let's see how that turned out. We can listen to your voice and Sting together when you're singing backup in a live performance. This is a song called Why Should I Cry For You?
Why should I cry for you? Dark angels follow me over a godless sea. Mountains of endless falling for all.
That's Joe Lowry. She's my guest. She's backing up Sting at a live performance in Berlin with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in 2010. What was that performance like?
Well, I was still fairly new to the band by then, and I was pretty terrified. We did two sets in one evening, and that was going to be the performance. I mean, often with a DVD, you get to do quite a few goes at it, and they pick the best one. But we had one afternoon, and that was it. It was pretty scary, but also exhilarating. As you said, it was my dream gig. When I had my first car, I think I spent all my time driving around making up my own backing parts to Sting records, and it was literally, you know, my number one gig I wished to have, but I never thought that it would happen. It kind of came like a bolt out of the blue, really.
You really were. You were actually doing that before you even did that first audition.
Yeah. Wow. I think if anyone had asked me what is your absolute dream job, I would have said backing up for Sting.
Well, you did it, and that's great. By the way, we should point out that while you didn't hear him on that particular segment that we chose from that song, at that same performance was Branford Marsalis,
Durham's own,
who is on the larger record as well. So now the tables are turned. Sting is singing for you. Tell us how that happened.
Well, you know, he's a really generous boss, and he knew that I was making a record, and several times he said, you know, oh, you've done backups for me for 5 years. Maybe I should return the favor. And I would laugh, thinking that it was a joke. And then he would say it again. And then he said, you know, I mean, it can just be oohs and ahs. It doesn't have to be a lot. And then he said, I mean, you know, if I'm undermining your Brooklyn cool, like, you know, am I too old to be on your record? And then I realized, oh, okay, so he's actually serious. This is not empty. He would like to do it. And I thought, well, I can probably come up with something a bit more than some oohs and ahs. So there was a song that I thought would be ideal for him.
It went like this.
It's incurable what you've done to me.
little bit of Impossible. Joe Lowry from the album Taking Pictures, and that was Sting backing her up. So you finally took him seriously. So can you say to him, oh, now how about a little more of this, a little less of that? You didn't do that.
No, I can actually. I mean, he's the perpetual student. He's always wanting to learn, you know, and push and do something different. I mean, that's been really, really inspiring to me. And it's actually really helped me in the gig itself, because so many times he'll ask me to do something with which I'm not comfortable. He's had me play violin, which is something from, you know, my past life as a young musician in Australia, you know. And I mean, even standing up there with a rock band in 6-inch heels is something that was very unfamiliar and scary to me, you know, kind of moving and dancing in front of people. That's not something jazz musicians usually do. So, you know, he's not afraid to try something that's unfamiliar, and he loves to have feedback. So it was good in that way.
So tell us about the decision to strike out on your own. Had this always been the goal for you?
Well, I've always done a combination of solo and sideman stuff. The thing that was really new was the songwriting element. I've always secretly sort of written songs, but then thrown them away. I almost never played them in public until I made this record. And so playing my own music is this thing that's really, really new for me. And that did significantly grow out of working with Sting and him challenging me to write and do things like that. I mean, he gave me this guitar that you'll hear a little bit later, and this is the instrument on which I've written all the songs on the record, and he's been very encouraging in that way. So it's something a little scary, but I feel like if he's going to do things that scare him, who am I to say no?
You were to say no. It is a cool looking guitar. It looks like a ukulele on steroids in a way.
Yeah, it's a little parlor guitar. It's modeled after a late 1920s Martin. It's actually a replica made by an Australian luthier called Jack Spira. I think he makes about 3 guitars a year. So.
Well, that one looks great. How about if we hear it? Could you do a song for us?
I'd love to. I'd like to play the title track from the album. It's called Taking Pictures. And just as a little introduction, it's kind of lamenting how social media has taken over our lives. We don't really enjoy the moment anymore because we're so busy, ready to upload it to Instagram. But hope you like this. This is Taking Pictures.
Oh, the house got quiet in the fall, and a chill hung in the air. I pretended not to notice it, and you pretended not to care. And since I couldn't find the words to say, I booked a window and an aisle. I hoped we'd find the key in Paris, and I could take some pictures of Mona Lisa's smile. I made a list, I made a plan, but I forgot to make some time for us to take a walk in Saint-Germain just holding hands. 'Cause I was so intent on making sure that I made the trip worthwhile, that I missed your face in Paris. 'Cause I was taking pictures of Mona Lisa's smile, and in that rat race I was always running round. Oh, I never let my feet touch solid ground, and I got so caught up in the day-to-day that I never even saw you. And I'm in front of her again, and the curving corner of her mouth tells me she knows what I should have known back then. So I let the tourists bustle stand here for a while, and I think of how I miss your face. Ooh, while they're all taking pictures of Mona Lisa's smile, oh, they're all taking pictures of Mona Lisa's smile, oh, they're all taking pictures of Mona Lisa's smile.
Joe Lowry, the title track from her new album, Taking Pictures. She's here in the area to do a number of performances. You can see them all at her website, stateofthings.org. It's a lovely song, but I'm thinking about your songwriting skills. This is one that you've written. It's a beautiful song. You studied jazz. You sang with Sting. And those are the songs you were writing. Were those the songs that you say you were more or less tucking in your drawer and not going out and performing? Or has your songwriting evolved as well? Are you writing different kinds of songs now?
Well, the kinds of songs that I'm writing are largely a function of my limitations on guitar. I'm quite new to the instrument, and actually that's one of the things that has, you know, it's one of it's the paradox of the freedom given by limitations. When I sit down at the piano after, you know, having studied jazz for about 20 years, you know, I know what the chords are. I know what I want to do, and I can think of some clever things to do harmonically. And on the guitar, I'm a complete innocent, to put it nicely. and so I'm kind of freed from the compulsion to do something clever musically. Mm. And I find that somehow seems to give way to, I guess, letting the story be in charge a little bit more rather than be so music driven. And that has been really freeing for me.
Is that what? So what about the future for you? Do you want to continue sort of on this dual track? Do you want to specialize in one or the other, backup singing, solo career?
You know, it's really hard to say because I love them both equally and differently. I'm sure I'll continue writing songs. It's something that I'm compelled to do, especially, you know, when life events come along. When something powerful happens in my life, the first impulse these days is to write a song about it. But that said, there's something I love so much about collaborating with others. And there's actually, you know, it's no picnic being a leader sometimes. It's a lot easier sometimes to just be charged with trying to make somebody else's music work. And it's a wonderful thrill. You know, that's one thing I loved about the 20 Feet from Stardom movie that we saw, you know, Lisa Fisher, who is one of the best backing vocalists out there. She's incredible. And you know, she's so interesting. I think people always assume that backing singers are kind of living some kind of career booby prize. But for some of us, it's what we love to do best. And there's nowhere we'd really rather be. So I'm just very lucky that I get to do both these days. And actually that one job kind of pays for the other one.
Well, we are fortunate to have you on this program. Joe Lowry, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Joe Lowry is a backup singer and a solo artist who is featured in the Oscar-winning film 20 Feet from Stardom. The new solo album is called Taking Pictures. She's going to perform tomorrow at Rosefest in Bahama, Sunday at 2 o'clock at the BU Cafe, and then at Sharp 9 later that evening in Durham. You can find out all those dates at our website, stateofthings.org. By the way, we're going to be in Raleigh Monday for a screening of The Graduate. You can be in the audience. We're doing Movies on the Radio live. You can be there. Check out our website to see how you can be there for the screening of The Graduate in Durham. Just ahead, the Chompy Quartet returns with live classical music. Stay tuned.